Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues here on the American Family Radio Network. You're listening to AFR. I'm Tim Wildman, and we're going to be here for the next hour and 25 minutes talking about what's happening in our country and some international stories as well, trying to keep you up to speed with what's going on. Walker Wildman here with me. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be here with you.
Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Absolutely fantastic to be here. And before we introduce our next host,
yes,
I'm just going to say it's just peachy keen to be here.
Peachy keen to be here.
Yeah.
I think our other host, none other than Dr. Ray Pritchard, would identify with your Keechy peen. We're off to a bad start if I'm leading the way here today. Peachy keen is an expression, Ray, from the 50s, right?
Well, that dates me, Tim. I was born somewhere in that decade. And, hey, here in Kansas City today, it's bright. It's sunshiny. It's about 70 degrees. Great golf weather.
There you go.
Everything is peachy keen right now.
That's what I'm talking about. I think peachy keen ruled the day, so to speak, until Groovy took over in the 70s.
That's right.
In the late 60s.
Sounds like a good fruit drink.
Peachy keen?
Yeah.
Peachy
keen.
It does,
here,
doesn't it?
Have a bottle of peachy keen.
Just FYI here, Walker, peachy keen, and I was caught in between. Peachy keen had left. Groovy had taken over. And peachy keen means everything's good.
Okay.
You picked that up, didn't you?
Yeah, I got the CD in my truck. Totally kidding.
Now, right. Is he making fun of CDs as being old?
You got to go to
8-track.
Okay, I've got
A-track.
I got a tape in my truck.
That's right. An 8-track tape.
Cassette tapes are in museums now as way back when.
And who even knows what an 8-track tape is, right?
Well, so Peachy Keen means you're doing well, but... So who phrased that? Who coined that phrase?
I don't know. Where'd that come from?
It probably goes back to the 50s, 60s era.
But I mean, where did it come? Peachy keen, what is that?
I'm thinking American Graffiti, you know.
Okay. What about you, Ray?
I'm looking right now.
Origination of peachy keen as an expression of you know, it's a great day. Everything's good.
Well, somebody said they thought it came from Georgia, you know. I'm just looking on the internet here. They're guessing it came
from. Well, that's a good place to start, right?
That's a good guess.
It's on the internet. It's got to be true. Walker, while Ray's looking up what Peachy Keen means on that there internet, how can folks engage with our show today?
Yeah, a couple ways to keep up with the show. The first way is on Facebook and YouTube, both those places you can watch the show. And on Facebook, on the Today's Issues page, I'll post all the news stories we talk about, many of them from onenewsnow.com. The last way you can keep up with the show is just to download the app on your smartphone or your tablet device. Download the American Family Radio app and listen. Not only listen live, but you can listen to past shows on the app on your phone or tablet device.
All right. So take advantage of that, folks. We welcome you to comment on the show on our Facebook page or take advantage of those things Walker mentioned here on Today's Issues on American Family Radio. So what did your research show?
Something from the 50s, maybe from Georgia. It seems like nobody really knows.
Okay, where that originated. You know, some things like that are from movies, for example, mm-hmm. where people pick up expressions and then begin to use them, and they take root in pop culture, so to speak. That expression from the 50s, and am I right? Groovy, probably mid-60s.
Groovy would be the 60s, right?
Yeah.
Groovy, and then cool somewhere.
Cool. Cool 70s.
Hip. Cool. Hip.
And now it's awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And awesome's worn out.
Now, Walker can relate to that.
Yeah.
Awesome's, and I use it, but I'm searching for another word to express.
I feel a contest coming.
Yeah,
I feel a contest.
But you're right. Awesome did take over. Now, Ed Vitagliano on Trivia Fridays has has invented the expression awesomer.
That's new.
Yeah.
Is that good English there? Is that their good English?
Is that their, Ed calls it that, their internet too. So who knows? But awesomer is what the expression Ed uses. Well, a lot to talk about today. Dr. Frank Turek will be with us. Sandy Rios also will join us this hour as we get into some of the news. There's been a turn in the corner here on a tragic note. We've had the story out of Iowa about the young college girl, right?
Yeah, and the headlines have been the search continuing for Molly Tibbetts. She's the young lady, University of Iowa student. She's actually from Brooklyn, Iowa. She disappeared back July 18th. She was reported missing. She had gone out for a jog and did not come home. And there's money been raised, you know, rewards to try to find her, $400,000. But the news this morning, very tragic. Officials believe they have found the body of Molly Tibbetts. A news conference is planned in a couple of hours. Trying to fill in the details. There's just been so much about this, trying to figure out. No indication of all that, you know, she had enemies or anything of that nature. But, you know, this little town, Brooklyn, what does it have, 1,400 people or so? So certainly she's well-known. She's well-known nationally now. But very tragic end to this story. Now the coin turns, and the person who actually started this fund, reward fund, says he wants to take that money now and turn it towards finding out what happened to this young lady.
Someone was she jogging on campus, or was this in her hometown?
In her hometown, you know, town of 1,400 people, small town. She had a routine, apparently, going out jogging, and she never came back one day. It's very sad.
Yeah, but they did. They discovered her body.
That's what officials are saying at this hour. As I say, there'll be a news conference in a couple of hours, and perhaps they'll start filling in some details as to where the body was found, maybe give an indication of... What
you know, that happens enough. By that, I mean young women, girls abducted while they're jogging. You read about this every once in a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, you wouldn't think it would take place in a small town in Iowa, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It's dangerous for women. I would not advocate women go out jogging anywhere by themselves, unless they're like you're in like a public setting where you're on a jogging track or something like that. But especially if you have a routine where you go the same place every day, and you can be
which is what most people do, right?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, most joggers do the same, like bike riders. We do the same thing almost every day.
Yeah,
and the shock of it is that, you know, this kind of thing, if it happened in Dallas or L.A. or San Francisco or Washington, it would be just as tragic, but it wouldn't be as shocking.
Yeah.
I mean, this is small town America, Brooklyn, Iowa, very, very small, picturesque Iowa community.
Mm-hmm.
So you would think, Tim, if there's any place safe to jog, that's where it would be. Mm-hmm. And then she goes out and doesn't come home. And then the awful, awful news this morning.
The chances of it being a random... I'm assuming someone did something to her that caused her death, but the chances of that being a random attack, meaning someone's driving to the grocery store and they see the teenager and they just decide they're going to kill her. This was probably someone who saw her jog every afternoon and then decided they were going to do something, because the chances of it being random.
So they'll probably find out who did it.
Probably.
They probably already have some indication about this. They just haven't revealed it to the public, and that may come at this news conference.
Yeah, I would just say word of caution. Again, if you're particularly young ladies, I wouldn't. You better be careful. Better take
go out. You know, find someone else to go with, right?
Yeah.
If it's at all possible.
That's right. Jog with somebody else.
Let people know where you're going.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
and do it in the daytime. A lot of people like to get up at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning, especially in the summertime, jog when it's cool, or in the evening after sunset at night. Just don't do that.
My wife used to run at our first house here in town, and when we first got married, she would run. It took her about 30, 35 minutes, and I would know her route, and I would know how long it would take her. And if it got 10 or 15 minutes past when she should have been home, you know, that's a sign that you, something's
wrong.
You
went looking for her probably, or called.
Well, yeah, yeah. I would ride, you know, and she would have gone, talked to somebody on a neighbor or something. And,
yeah.
You know, everything was fine, but you need to know where your family
can
members
you jog
are going.
Can you jog with your phone in your hand?
You can.
I don't know. I don't jog.
Well, a lot of people now are jogging. They have their earbuds in, and they carry it. They have these things that you can purchase. They carry it on their
own. Then you can't hear somebody come up behind you, though.
There's a danger to that.
Or you can't hear a car honking at you
right,
if you got earplugs in.
That can be dangerous. The other thing, too, is I think more and more women are being cautioned, carry some pepper spray or something like that with them. And, you know, you can buy these little bottles of spray, you know, protect you against dogs, but I mean—
right.
It might be
the
best
thing to do is find somebody to go with or go to a public place.
Yes.
I mean, in today's world, I'm sorry, you would like to think you could be safe, but here we have a small town, Iowa. You would never think something like this would happen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But her body, the young lady's body has been discovered.
Yes.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. By the way, American Family Radio is celebrating 27 years today is our birthday. Thank you to birthday Dave Dabney. That's what we call birthday Dave of Jackson, Mississippi. He has reminded us that today is the 27th anniversary.
Do you remember the first
of
day
AFR.
Of broadcasting? I know you were really, really young.
Yeah, I have a vague memory of that. J.J. Jasper was our first voice on the air on
that's
that
what
morning.
I thought.
Really, really.
Yeah.
Yep, he was 27 years ago, 1991, our first radio station. When we have more time, I'll tell this story more thoroughly. Frank Turk's waiting, so I'll get to him in just a moment. But we went on the air, 88.3 FM in Tupelo, Mississippi. And we cover Northeast Mississippi with that signal. That was our first signal. And then we became a network when we went on in Jackson, Tennessee.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Our station there at the old country store.
Yeah.
Clark Shaw and our friends there. Mm-hmm. And so then we branched out. I think Jonesboro, Tennessee was station number 3. And we just started sweeping the country with new stations on American Family Radio. Today we have 183. We would probably have 400 stations had we not been stopped by the FCC. Now, the FCC didn't physically say you can't build any more stations, but they changed the rules on how to build stations and buy stations and so forth, and it really hindered our progress in terms of adding new stations to the AFR network. But today marks 27 years on the air for American Family Radio.
That's fantastic.
So maybe I'll tell more of that story later, but there's more to tell there. My dad was the brains behind AFR. My dad, Don Wildman, was the brains behind AFR, and it was very interesting how he found out how to build this network. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about that more later. But our good friend, Dr. Frank Turek from Cross Examined Ministries is with us from Charlotte. Frank joins us every Tuesday that he can, and we explore various and sundry questions, mostly related to the Bible or to the Christian faith, and Frank joins us now. Good morning, Frank.
Congratulations, 27 years. Tim, you know, you guys added about 8 stations a year and probably could have added more, but 183, that's a lot of stations.
Well, we had 100 in probably 5 years. I mean, somewhere in the 5 to 10 year range. I mean, we were just blowing and going. I think that's why this is conspiratorial, but somebody figured, hey, this Christian radio network is growing faster than any other network in America, and we need to slow this thing down.
Mm-hmm.
I have ideas about who did that, but I can't prove it, so I don't want to be sued.
Well, it's still robust. You got a big network out
Amen.
There.
Amen. So, and you've been on with us how many years now?
Oh, at least 10. I think it was 2008 when we started that, cross-examined on Saturday morning. So thanks for that opportunity. We still do it, obviously, every Saturday at 10 Eastern, 9 Central.
Frank's show is our number one podcast. Did you know that, Fred?
Did not know that,
Fred,
but doesn't
you know
surprise
that?
Me.
I had no idea.
Well, That's because, Tim, my mom downloads it 186 times a day.
Frank, does she have these computer bots set up to where it automatically downloads?
She's got it all lined up, so that's why I'll always be number one.
Hey, I lost the question I'm supposed to ask you. What was it?
We're going to talk about some questions you should ask your non-Christian friends.
Go.
Instead of making statements. Well, I think one of the first questions you ought to ask somebody is, why aren't you a Christian? I mean, there's a lot of reasons why people might not be a Christian, right? It might be that, well, something we just talked about, the tragic story of the lady who was killed in Iowa. You know, if there is a good God, why does he allow this evil to occur? That might be a question, a legitimate question that somebody would say, look, I just can't believe in a good God because of that. Mm-hmm. It could be because they were wronged by somebody who claimed to be a Christian. It could be because they had a bad upbringing and their father was a Christian and their father was mean to them or something. Mm-hmm. It could be because they haven't seen any evidence. It could be because they think it's just something you're born with. It could be because they have the wrong view of what Christianity is all about. I mean, there's a million and one reasons, but you ought to ask the question, mm-hmm. I think. Cool. And then after you get an answer, well, this is typically the question I ask after I've had a dialogue with somebody and they seem to be not just neutral but hostile to Christianity. The question I like to ask people is, if Christianity were true, would you become a Christian? And a lot of times people will say no. Doesn't matter what you say to them, because they're not really on a truth quest or on a happiness quest. They just want to believe whatever they think is going to make them happy. And the problem is, you can make yourself happy doing a lot of foolish, sinful things over the short term, but over the long term, it's a disaster. And everybody listening to me who's over 40 years old knows what I'm talking about, because many of us have tried it. We've tried it our way, and it hasn't worked out. So I always ask them, if Christianity were true, would you become a Christian? And when they say no, you know you're not dealing with an evidentiary problem. You're dealing with not with a head problem, but with a heart problem. Mm. And so in that case, you just pray for them and you love them. That's about all you can do.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, Frank, sometimes we Christians are too quick, and I gotta phrase this right, but do you think sometimes we're too quick maybe to jump into getting the gospel presentation out, that we would be, especially with this generation, why would we be better off maybe to ask the questions first and then make the presentation later?
Because for that very reason, sometimes we're trying to apply a solution to a problem somebody doesn't think they have. Right?
That's good. Yeah.
Nobody's interested in a solution to a problem they don't have. They don't even think. They don't even know what the gospel is, or they don't even think they're sinners or they need forgiveness. They think they're being good enough. You know, I mean, they if they believe in God at all, well, God's just going to approve of me because I'm not as bad as a murderer or something like that, you know. So, I think asking questions. And my problem is, I think anybody who has studied the evidence for Christianity, a lot of times our problem is that we want to jump to an answer before we even know what the question is. So somebody says something that we know is wrong, and instead of asking them a couple of questions I'll reveal here in a minute, we jump right to a counter or a refutation of that problem, when in fact, that's just going to get the person defensive. So what we ought to say, if they say something like, well, you know, I can't believe the Bible because it's been changed throughout the centuries, what you ought to ask them is, what do you mean by that? Mm-hmm. What do you mean it's been changed throughout the centuries? And then ask them, how did you come to that conclusion? Because so many times people don't have evidence for what they believe. They just have slogans. You know, they've heard the slogan, the Bible's been changed throughout the centuries, and so they think it's true. But as soon as you ask them for evidence, they're without any intellectual justification for it. So you might say to someone who said that, how did you come to that conclusion? Have you studied the manuscript evidence for yourself? How many people do you think are going to say, you know, just last night I was up reading a book about the Byzantine line of manuscripts? No, nobody's going to say that, right? So always ask the questions, what do you mean by that? And how did you come to that conclusion before you try and counter what somebody says?
Frank, it's Fred here. You know, there was a school of thought for many years, and some people, I think, still adhere to it. And this is, you hear this for, you know, church door knocking programs. And you go to somebody's door and you knock on the door, they come to the door, and the first question you're supposed to ask them is, if you die tonight, do you know what's going to happen to you?
Yeah.
You know, I maybe it does work in some cases, but I have found it just gets people in a defensive mode, or it really kind of, they're almost ready for a verbal battle with you.
Yeah, it may have worked a generation ago when people had respect for the Bible. Today they don't, right? Yeah, a lot of times you say the Bible says something, and that's like saying if you're a conservative, CNN says something.
Right.
You go, whoa, wait a minute. I don't really care what CNN says. I'm already dismissing it. You know, they think it's kind of the same thing because they have this mindset against the Bible already. So I'm not saying don't try that approach, but I'm saying if you try it and it you don't get the results you think you should get, you might want to try another approach. You may want to update the approach given the fact that the culture is decidedly against us.
Interesting. So
what about turn or burn?
Turn or burn. Repent now or burn. Yeah, I like that, Tim. That's
as an icebreaker.
Yeah, as an ice.
You don't think that's
Well, a little hellfire will certainly melt some ice. Yeah, I don't.
Okay, well, I just wondered how you felt
about it. You thought you'd try that, huh?
I felt about that. I had somebody suggest that to me the other day as a witnessing slogan.
By the way,
yes.
We have a bunch of these questions in our app, so we have a list of them that people can
use. All right, where can I get this?
They go to the App Store and they type in cross-examined two words, and they'll find the app there, and it works on iPhone, it works on Droid. If you're one of the 9 people in the world with a Windows phone, it actually works on that too. So get the cross-examined app, two words in the App Store, and then go to our website, crossexamined.org. It's cross-examined with a D on the end.
I didn't mean to be flippant with the gospel message. It probably sounded that way to some people. that's probably a Christian joke in the hallway that I probably shouldn't have used because it's a serious matter when you're talking about people's souls.
Yes.
And we all have to repent of our sin and turn to Christ for forgiveness and trust in Jesus. Or the Bible says we do go to hell. It's a choice that he sets before us to trust Christ, or the results or the consequences of not trusting Christ, or the Bible calls it hell. So,
well, thankfully, Tim, here on the American Family Radio Network, you can say that. You might not be able to get away with that on the big socials, though. But here, you can.
Yeah. All right, Frank, thanks so much, my friend. Appreciate it.
Great being with you guys. Cool. God bless.
Talk to you again
next week. One other thing. Can I mention one other thing?
Please do.
I'm doing a debate with Michael Shermer this Friday out in California, and it's going to be live streamed on our Facebook page, crossexamined.org. It will start at 7 Pacific, so that means 10 Eastern, 9 Central, and we're debating what best explains reality, God or atheism, theism or atheism. So we both have the burden of proof to explain why the world is the way it is, so it's myself against the publisher of Skeptic Magazine, Dr. Michael Shermer. So people can tune in and watch that on our Facebook page at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 Eastern, 9 Central.
This Saturday morning?
No, this Friday. This Friday night.
Oh, this is Friday night.
Yes, sir. Friday night. Out for, all the way from San Jose, California.
So what do I need to do? What I need to do to watch this?
Go to our Facebook page at crossexamined.org Facebook page. I think we'll try and stream it on our website too, crossexamined.org, so you can watch it live there.
Crossexamined.org.
Yes, sir.
All right, Dr. Frank Turek, T-U-R-E-K, has been with us. Well, God bless you. We'll pray for you, Frank, as you do
that. Appreciate it, man. See you guys.
Thank you. Well, I'm thankful for people like Frank who are willing to do debates like that. And Frank really, his ministry is built to help us as Christians know how to communicate the gospel to the world, to a skeptical world, a world that's often hostile to our biblical beliefs. We shall return in a few minutes with more of today's issues. We're going to take a short break right here. Dr. Ray Pritchard is with us from Kansas City. Walker, Tim, and Fred, we're in Tupelo. And Sandy Rios will join us from Parts Unknown coming up in just a few minutes. Stay with us.
On the next Today's Issues, we'll have a Facebook Live question and answer session.
If you have a Facebook account, just type in Today's Issues in your search bar, and then our page will pop up. And you can watch the show there every day, or you can view all the articles that we talk about.
Right, but you can also be our friend.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News reporters. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Well, the last 2 years, we've just had tremendous response, early response to the announcement that we're going to Israel. on a Holy Land tour. We're going March of this year. We go March of every year. Last year we filled up like early fall, and I expect us to fill up early fall this year as well. So if you're interested in this March 14th through the 22nd tour, and you'll be going with primarily supporters of AFA and AFR, just get the brochure and check it out. You can call us today at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll mail you a brochure. If you simply want to go online, all the information is there. It's at twholyland.com, twholyland.com. If you want to go in March, we're filling up, and we're filling up fast, so check it out, twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. I've been telling you about California Assembly Bill 2943 for quite some time now, legislation that would specifically target churches, Christian conferences, or bookstores that sell products or provide services regarding beliefs about gender and sexual orientation. Well, I have some disturbing news for you. The California Senate passed the legislation one step closer to law. The bill would make it illegal under the state's Consumer Protection Law to offer any practices that seek to change gender expression. Alliance Defending Freedom accused the state of silencing certain beliefs, calling the legislation an outright attack on the heart of the gospel. We cannot and we must not allow that to happen. People of faith must fight back in the courts or otherwise. Renowned Christian writer Dr. Michael Brown issued this ominous warning: Christians in California should prepare for civil disobedience. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back to Today's Issues. Fred Jackson in studio, Ray Pritchard in Kansas City, and Sandy Rios is on the line with us. She joins us each Tuesday at about 10:30 to talk the news of the day. Welcome to the show, Sandy.
Thank you, Walker. I'm trying to enunciate because I'm missing some parts of my body here. You guys know I have to explain this, you know.
Oh, yes, you do.
I do.
Go ahead.
No, you all well know I had a biking accident 2 years ago. And in addition to breaking my nose and my jawbone in two places and having a terrible cut in my lower lip, I knocked my teeth out. And it's been almost 2.5 years, and I'm just getting them. I'm just now getting them taken care of, so I can't. I'm missing some things, and that's why I've been trying to do the show as clearly as I can. And so I have to speak to you as distinctly as I can.
Say Mississippi.
you are cruel. You are sadistic.
I want to see how your S's are. I want to see how your S's are. Oh man.
Okay.
Go ahead.
How about supercalifragilisticexpialidocious?
Yeah, anybody will mess that up, Fred.
How about it?
Oh, my word.
Now, and I also have something else to tell you guys that's really important. This is really the headline. Because according to English Language and Usage Stack Exchange, the term Peachy King came from Jim Hawthorne, a West Coast radio disc jockey. And it came out of the late 40s. I knew that. I just thought that should be headlines on Fox this morning.
Absolutely.
That's where Peachy King came from.
Did you say Peachy K-I-N-G?
King. Don't make fun of my
I thought you did say that. I'm sorry. That was an honest mistake.
Peachy King. Now, you're making me really paranoid about my speech. Worse than I already am.
Peachy King. I thought that's like
that's a new one.
Yeah, a frozen treat.
Yeah, frozen drink or something like that. What do you call those things? Smoothie.
Oh, well, there we go. A smoothie.
Okay. We're just going to get the dictionary out and let you start reading, Sandy, and we'll just enjoy. Oh, my word. Hey, you know what? The interesting thing is we got two guys. A guy and a lady, Sandy and Ray. Ray joins us from Kansas City. Ray, you're also a biker. Have you ever had an accident like Sandy?
Yeah, but not like that. Sandy, that's a serious,
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Glad you have recovered or are recovering.
Have you ever had an accident like that, Ray? I mean, not like that, but I mean.
I've been shot at twice while I was riding my bike.
Wait a minute now. Okay.
In Chicago.
You got to finish that story.
So that explains everything. No, I have, but was shot at twice while I was riding my bike in Chicago.
Wow. Oh, two different occasions?
Yeah, two different. And one time the kid hit me with the pellet gun, hit me right behind the ear.
Other
time I was at a intersection and a car followed me across the intersection and I heard a gunshot and I looked up and the bullet had passed between my legs and it was kids with guns laughing and yelling and they drove off. So
They weren't members of your church.
Was the second Ray was the second
not
one?
Not that I know of. I didn't recognize any of the faces.
Was the second one also a pellet gun or was it
a pistol? Some kind of pistol.
Okay.
And I saw the kid with, and he just drove off. So there was a bunch of them laughing and carrying, you know.
Oh, my goodness gracious. That was in Chicago when you
were
10 years ago or so?
Yeah, that would be now more like 16, 17 years ago. Yeah.
Amazing. By the way, Sandy, we were talking yesterday about this situation. You know, Ray lived a long time in Chicago. You lived a long time in Chicago. You did Christian radio in Chicago. And we were talking yesterday about the crime situation and the shootings. You know, it's made national news. 60 60 people shot in Chicago last weekend. And Sandy, do you have a is there a reason why the violence is so bad in that city? Now, I will say this. I saw the statistical information. I think St. Louis, Memphis, and maybe there are a couple of other cities. I don't know where Kansas City is in this. Were per capita more violent than even Chicago. Mm-hmm. But, of course, Chicago is the third largest city in America. And it's getting getting a lot of attention for these for the violence there. Anyway, Sandy, is there a particular reason why this is happening in the Windy City?
Yeah, I think so. What's your name? My boss, Tim. Sorry. A little lapse of thought. No, I do think so because the police chief actually over the weekend said there's a reason for this. It doesn't take a rocket scientist. He said there's no punishment. They're not being brought to justice. Mm. They're not caught, or and when they do go to court, they get off easy. And I will. There's some things that Rahm Emanuel has done since he's been there that has created this, Tim. For one thing, he entered into an agreement with the ACLU that officers would fill out reports every time they stopped someone. And my sources tell me it takes at least 45 minutes. These are detailed reports. So every time an officer in the hood is trying to track down something, they have to fill out these lengthy reports. What they said, who they said it to, describe everything. And the second thing is, Rahm Emanuel closed down the two detective centers in the highest crime areas of Chicago so that other detectives are having to cover, and it's a long drive. You know, Chicago's a big, thick city. Mm-hmm. Takes a long time to get to various areas. And the other thing is he cut back the police force. He did that right away. Now, they've had to hire new people since then because that definitely was not working. And then the other thing is he's increased their hours. Chicago policemen are working long, long hours. I just saw a picture this morning of two of them asleep in their squad car. Somebody caught a picture of it. And the last thing is I've been told that actually the city is undercounting their murders. They're writing them off or they're calling them something else. So you can lay it squarely at the feet of Rahm Emanuel and the people around him.
Right.
Well, and Sandy, as you know, this has been a problem in Chicago, basically one-party rule for, what, how many generations now? So you have a corrupt system, you have decaying neighborhoods, and now you have a mayor who, it appears to me, Sandy, he appears to me to be, on one hand, completely beholden to the left, completely beholden to the ACLU, and number two, clueless as to what to do now to make a difference. Now, he made some statement in the last few days, well, we got to get down to the root cause of this and fatherlessness and all that. But that's mighty late in the game to be talking about this. The people of Chicago, there are just some neighborhoods, Sandy, as you know, you're taking your life in your hand. If you walk down the street or if you drive through certain neighborhoods, it's just gotten that dangerous.
You know, Ray, the other part of this that I didn't say is Chicago had some of the strictest gun laws in the country.
Right.
They finally were forced, because of the Supreme Court decision, to kind of slack off. But what they made up for in rules and regulations, what they lacked there, they made up for in charging. It costs $450 to get a concealed carry weapon in Illinois right now. And there are no training centers in Chicago. So if a Southsider, a inner city family on the south side of Chicago that feels like they're under assault, want a gun, they have to borrow a car, drive to the suburbs to get their training, plus pay their $450. It's just outrageous. And if people could carry, you know, there's a story just out of Titusville, Florida, of a picnic where all these kids were, and then somebody came up and just started shooting, and a guy who had a concealed carry stopped him. Right. Now, I mean, that's just one story around the country. The citizens could rise up and protect themselves if only they could get guns.
Yep.
But it's the criminals who have guns, as you just well described, Ray, in your, you know, being shot at while you're riding your bike story.
Well, go ahead, Ray, you want to say something else?
Well, and the other thing, you know, if you go back to Chicago cops, a lot of them are really good, hardworking guys. I talked with one not too many months ago, and just a great guy, Sandy, one of the good guys. And he said, number one, he said, we've got good guys leaving the force now because they don't feel backed up. They don't feel like if there's a problem that the people up above them are going to have their backs. And he said, number two, frankly, partly because of what you said, this ACLU deal, there are now just some neighborhoods. He just said that some officers won't go into because if there's a problem, they don't believe the police department will have their back. Mm-hmm. And really, who can blame them?
Yeah.
Wow.
Nobody. It's terrible. It's terrible. And meanwhile, our black brothers and sisters in the hood in Chicago,
right,
their lives are very, they're living, yep, in a war zone. Their little children are being shot through the door, you know, watching television and killed. It's just, it's a free for all, and they can't protect themselves. It is disgraceful.
Yep. Sandy, thanks for being with us. One other question I had, I know you have been talking, changing topics completely, but Brennan, what's his name?
John.
John Brennan?
John Brennan, okay.
Yeah.
I heard on the Sandy Rios in the Morning show 2 days ago or yesterday that you were talking about, he's a former CIA director under President Obama, and he's had his security clearance revoked by President Trump, and Brennan's all mad about this. And it is unusual for this to happen. But you mentioned that this man, Brennan, had admitted to voting for the Communist Party candidate in 1980. Is that true?
It's absolutely true. And it might that not mean quite the year. It might be 78 or 76. I'm not, but it's around that era. And certainly, Tim, during those years, in that decade, we were in the middle of the Cold War.
Yes.
Maybe, and so there was no confusion about what communism was, about what they had intended, how they wanted to destroy us. So it's not a small thing that a CIA director.
No, it's disqualifying.
Voting. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sorry. I don't even think if you. If you have a conversion story, to me.
Well, he doesn't.
He doesn't. And
no, he bragged about it to potential CIA employees. I heard the tape. Yeah. So no, he thought it was actually funny. And he advised potential employees under him, don't worry if you got something like that. And
keep in mind,
you know,
folks,
you don't. This is a new CIA. You don't have to worry about that.
Well, two things here. One is, keep in mind, this is how extreme President Barack Obama was in his views, in his anti-Americanism that he held. I'm talking about Barack Obama, that he would go out and find a man like Brennan who voted for a communist candidate for president a couple of decades, 3 decades ago, whenever. Well, I don't care when it was. I don't care if he was four. years old. And of course, he wouldn't be voting age. But anyway, the point is that that's disqualifying if a person, especially if they've not renounced those communistic thoughts and feelings and political viewpoints. And so when, you know, when this is never talked about in the mainstream media at all. That's why we have AFR, for example, so we can bring these kinds of things to light. Well, Sandy, thanks so much for joining us this morning on today's issues. Who are you going to be talking to tomorrow morning?
Tomorrow morning, my goal is to talk about the budget mess in Washington, the mini buses, the fact that the Republican leadership is once again paying for funding every priority of the left. And that's what I want to talk about tomorrow. I'm not sure who the guest will be,
you're just the darling of the Republican establishment.
I'm sure I am not.
Well, go practice your S's. And
okay, I will.
We'll listen for you in the morning.
Okay, listen for me.
Okay.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
All right, that's Sandy Rios. Sandy hosts Sandy Rios in the Morning here on American Family Radio weekdays at 7:05 Central Time. So if you want to listen to Sandy, her hour on AFR, 7:05 Central Time each weekday morning. Sandy also serves as Director of Governmental Affairs for American Family Association, so she represents us in our nation's capital. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman and Fred Jackson, and Dr. Ray Pritchard. Ray's on with us from Kansas City, where he joins us every Tuesday and Thursday to co-host the program. Let me just tell you that you can watch this show on Facebook or YouTube. Walker mentioned this earlier, but go to Today's Issues, and you can type that in, Facebook or YouTube, and watch our show. Walker is also posting the stories that we've been discussing on our Facebook page as well. And we appreciate all our listeners to AFR and to the Today's Issues program. Fred, what's the next story?
Well, late last evening, federal authorities went to the home of a 95-year-old man in east part of New York City. His name is Jakub Palij, I believe it is, 95 years old. And they took him to the airport and sent him to Germany. Now, who is this guy? 95 years old. He came to this country after World War II, 1949, told authorities here he had been a carpenter in Poland. Well, It took a few years, but they found out that wasn't the case. He was actually an officer in a Nazi camp, in a camp that, at the very least, led to the murders, killings, massacre of thousands of little Jewish boys and girls, moms and dads. He came to this country in 1949, lied about it. But listen to this, folks. Justice Department investigators went to his door in 1993. And confronted him with the fact that he wasn't who he said he was. A judge in 2003 stripped him of his U.S. citizenship. You say, what's going on? This is 2018. But here's the thing. They could not find a way to deport this guy until late last night. Previous administrations didn't see it as a priority. One of the excuses that's being used, well, he wasn't a citizen of the U.S. anymore. He wasn't a citizen of Germany or Poland anymore. Germany, Poland didn't want him. But it took the administration of President Donald Trump to work out something with these nations that they now agreed to finally take this man, who was a Nazi concentration camp officer, probably was there to carry out the orders of the massacre of these Jewish, as I say, men, women, children. And finally, this man has been deported, 95 years old. What happens to him now, we don't know. But it is an incredible story. He is the last known, apparently, according to the stories this morning, of the Nazi officers who made it out of Germany at the end of World War II. So he's gone. He's back in Dusseldorf, Germany this morning.
You know, I wonder if the Democrats are okay with this. I mean, because it was ICE who carried him to the airport, mm-hmm. put him on an airplane. So I wonder if because they want to abolish ICE.
Yes.
Who would do this if ICE didn't exist?
Exactly.
Would be the question.
Exactly. It took this administration You mentioned ICE. Yesterday, President Trump had a ceremony at the White House celebrating what these people do every day. And there were testimonies of these officers that get up and what they've doing to get rid of these gang members who come up here from Mexico. And what they have done is rape our kids and murder our people, you know, just horrible, horrible individuals, as President Trump has described them. But it took, and you're exactly right, you have Democrats now who say we should eliminate ICE. But these are the people who are out there protecting Americans from individuals and finally bringing justice in this case. As I said, 1993, they've been tracking this guy in Queens, in New York, since 1993. Known he's there. Stripped of his citizenship in 2003, which is 15 years ago.
Wow.
But it finally took this administration to do what is right and get him out of this country.
You know, one of the things that Richard Grenell said, he's the ambassador to Germany. Mm-hmm. He said that when he met with the president instructed him that when he got to Berlin, he was to make it job number one to make sure we got this fella deported off our soil. So look, maybe, you know, maybe Bush tried something and maybe Mr. Obama tried something. Who knows, right? But it took Donald Trump in the White House to actually make this happen. And I just want to say as a side note, guys, there are some people, soft-headed thinkers, who say, well, it's been 75 years. Let it go. He's 95 years old. And as you said, Fred, this fella is, he's the last known person in the United States, the last known case of somebody who was a guard at a Nazi prison camp. I mean, obviously, most of them are long dead by now. But just, you know, as Martin Luther King said, that the arm of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice. And so justice is being done for a man who was a part of mass murder 75 years ago. And God bless President Trump and the other, and ICE and all the rest, and Richard Grenell, who made this happen.
Ray has mentioned the ambassador to Germany, our ambassador to Germany, Richard Grenell. Here's what he had to say about all this morning.
We have a president who really wants to fight for the American people, and he wants to make sure that the rule of law is followed. And so when you have a case like this, where in 2004, this individual is told that he is no longer a U.S. citizen and he must be deported, and consecutive administrations ignore that, I think it really tears down the rule of law. It takes somebody like the president to say, this is a decision. He is no longer a United States citizen. We want him out. And so we have to have diplomats and the entire Trump administration. We have to have people that are willing to follow the rule of law and not look for, you know, the roar of the crowd.
So there you have it. That's the U.S. ambassador to Germany, Richard Grenell, speaking this morning about the deportation overnight of this Nazi war criminal, finally removed from this country. And today he's in Düsseldorf, Germany. I'm not sure what the German officials are going to do with him. He's in very bad health, but he's not on American soil anymore.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Now, a lot of the Nazis, didn't they go to
Argentina?
There's a movie out now. I saw it advertised the other day.
It's coming out.
It's coming out with starring Ben Kingsley, I think.
Yes. Yes.
No, best known for playing Gandhi, but it's a story about a Nazi official who moved to Argentina, right?
That's right. And the folks.
What's the name of the show? The movie. Do you know, Walker?
No, I don't.
If you Google Kingsley, you'll like.
I believe it's called The Finale. Is that
right? The what?
The finale.
The finale.
The finale.
That's right.
Okay.
But anyway, it's a story. It's a true story, I think.
It is. It's a true story, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. Hopefully the language is decent in it, but it's an historic story.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. What you got another story?
Oh, yeah.
For us?
Chapel Hill, last night, a mob at the University of North Carolina decided they didn't like a Confederate statue there, and they just went crazy last night and tore
Chapel Hill,
and tore this thing down.
Seriously, just tore it down?
Just tore it down. It is, the university says it's been under security now for months, But this mob last night managed to get in there despite the security and to tear this thing down. Now, the governor of the state says he's upset by this. We can't have this kind of violence. And the university officials are saying, no, no, this is the wrong thing to do. Here's my guess on this one. Nothing will happen to these students.
Yeah, this is how you get a Chicago.
Yeah.
You say, you know what? It's too many people. We can't handle them. Let's just let them do their thing.
Yeah.
Well, what if you applied that rule to everything? Well, it's just a bank robbery, and you know you're putting officers at risk. So let's just let them rob the bank.
Yeah.
And so it's shameful for the. Was this on campus?
On campus, yeah.
Yeah.
Shameful for the university police. I mean, how embarrassing is that to have these rioters running your campus and you're too cowardice to go stop them from tearing down a monument? If you want the monument down, you go before the school board or the city council, whatever jurisdiction you're in, and you vote to have it removed.
Yeah.
All this does is tell other people, if you don't like a statue, tear it down, right? Because at least... You know, if it's the right kind of statue, quote, or the wrong kind, you know, tear it down, and after the fact, we'll go tisk tisk, and we'll say, well, that really shouldn't have happened, but nothing will be done to stop it. This really is an attack on the rule of law.
Yeah,
that's all it is.
Yeah, when you got these monuments and statues, which have been in the news, many of them having to do with the Confederacy or the Civil War, you know, you can't just go around in a mob and tearing them down.
What if people for the KKK said, we don't like the MLK statue. We're just going to go mob. We're going to rush downtown and just tear it down. No, they would have police in there in a heartbeat.
They would swarm
that thing, and the judges would press so the prosecutors would press so many charges.
Look, the students knew nothing would happen. And nothing, and if guys, I don't think anything's going to happen. I mean, the governor said he, quote, deplored this, but nobody did anything to stop it while it was happening. And I don't think anybody's going to.
Well, the governor
trouble.
Has a campaign that he wants to get rid of these monuments. He's come out and said this. I may sound a little snarky here, but I'd love to interview these students who did this last night. Tell me about the history of the Civil War.
Right.
What have you learned about that?
They won't know.
I'd like to see the look on their face because it would be blank.
Yeah,
right.
They don't know.
Well, Walker, you made the important point. If you want to move a statue, there are ways to get it done, right?
Yeah.
If it needs to be moved, fine, move it. But don't use mob action to tear down a statue about a period of history you don't like.
Right.
Yeah, and a lot of these would be considered works of art of national interest, so that. Maybe you don't want them somewhere in a public park, but maybe you want to put them in a museum, for example.
Right, then move it, right?
Then move it, but go through the proper channels.
Exactly.
And don't just go around, getting a bottle of whiskey and get 20 of your friends together and go,
the reality
go tear down a monument and say, I'm a great person. Go ahead.
The reality is that there's a 90% chance they could get that removed through the legal process.
Yeah.
I mean, look at New Orleans and all these cities. They're tearing down the monuments, but they're doing it through a
process. These people, to me, they don't have anything better to do. I mean, good night. We got 60 people shot in Chicago,
right.
And we got violence in many cities around the country, and I don't know. We want to tear down a Civil War monument.
Yeah,
make you feel better or something. I don't know what that accomplishes exactly. We shall return with more of today's issues in 5 minutes here on American Family Radio. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.